Good afternoon. I was telling Fabian that I can push Doug Beagle to the break anyway, so I have all the time of the world here. Okay, thanks to the Anne and Fabian for organizing this symposium. I think that they did a good job in terms of the order of the talks. I think it was very good that I came after Dave and the two Daves. Okay, I think all of you know the importance of soil test calibration and what it is. Essentially, it means to give a meaning to a soil test value in terms of nutrient sufficiency and the fertilizer need. We need this because we have different tests, you know, that extract different amounts for phosphorus. There are at least 20 different soil tests in the world, about 6-7 in the United States. So we need to do that. Units of measurements doesn't mean anything without the calibration. We all talk about soil test calibration, you know, and many people don't really think what they're saying. See, one thing is correlation of a soil test, another thing is calibration. So I think it's important for a couple of things that I will mention today. In the correlation, we need to essentially relate soil test values to absolute or relative response in some way. We can determine the critical concentration value or range and establish interpretation classes that most of us use. Of course, you can use all kind of models and equations and things and objectives and so forth. We can use just one control and one rate in order to do this, as long as the rate is not too low and it's not excessive that reduce yield. For calibration, whatever, we are trying to determine what is the fertilizer rate that we need to apply for each of these soil test values or for the different ranges there. And that's a different story, see? It's more complicated for various reasons. So we need trials, you know, with several rates on replication and so forth. Now, the traditional field calibration, of course, has been done for years in small plots. That's what many of us in this room do or try to do, at least with the funding issues that we have. We have replicated small plot trials. We had to have several different locations, different years, with different soil test values, and a wide range, different soil types. We have to do this for specific crops. We need several years to consider the effects of environmental conditions on yield and soil test value, like some of the things that Dave Francis was showing. And, of course, other controllable growth factors should not limit crop yield, such as other nutrients, plant population, etc., good yield levels. And we all that are in this business know that sometimes we do that, sometimes we don't, or we don't do it as we should. It's not easy sometimes. So this methodology, old and proved, I guess, have some disadvantages. I put those first. One is that it's expensive. Okay, we need, especially for the calibration when we have different rates. So we need plot equipment or a bunch of guys and graduate students or hourlies, you know, willing to work hard in order to apply treatments and harvest. It's not practical to study effects of within-field variability of soil properties and yield level on relationship between response and soil test values. Some people have done it. I remember we did it with Fred Blackmer, you know, I remember we have these plots along the field, you know, it's a pain in the neck. We need to ask the farmers to open the field for us, you know, and don't need to harvest, you know, it's tough. And then, of course, for many out there, dealers or not, or farmers, this is not real world research, you know. This is these small plots, you know, usually in experiment station, that must not be good. Now, there are some advantages. In the small plots, we can have a uniform soil and yield level. Now, most people just go to a small plot area, you know, and just take a composite sample of 20, 25 cores, and that's the initial P or K. I strongly suggest you to go sample each plot, and you will see what if that's really true or not. And then it's easy to include several rates for calibration. And, of course, we have good experimental error control. See, that's the key issue. Now, when we walk to the field out there, we do have variability, as Dave Franson was showing, you know, and we have been doing that in Iowa since the early 90s. This is just a fraction of something, it's an example for potassium. We have strip trials about 1,000 feet long to a mile long, and then we have just 8 fields, and then these are the Iowa interpretation classes for K. And I think we have a pointer here. Oh, yeah. And you see that in all fields, with few exceptions, we have a great range, you know, and in soil test values, and we have a huge difference in response. You see, this is the methodology I'm going to talk about that we developed in order to have strip trials using GPS and GIS. And we show this, you know, in many Iowa fields. So we have this for phosphate. We have this for lime. Agustin Pagani, a student from Argentina, is here working on lime. We are finding this. So we have all this variability in soil test values and variability in response, both things. So back in the mid-90s, in the early 90s, we developed a methodology to work with these strip trials and using all these new gadgets and technologies. Essentially, I work with Dr. Oyarzabal, he's in Monsanto now, and with a graduate student, former Dave Wittry, and also with Paul Haynes, a statistician from Iowa State, that gave us fatherly advice when we got headaches. He was trying to help us. So we essentially adapted these strip trials to do that, and some people are doing this out there. Dealers with conscious and without conscious, and farmers, and extension people. So we have yield monitors, we have GPS, we have RTK now, we have GIS, we have all kind of black boxes that most of us don't understand what they do, but they're nice. Dense soil plant sampling, and then variable rate, which I think is the best thing that came in the world after Coors beer. Then, of course, if we have well-calibrated fertilizer applicators, that's an important thing, and yield monitors, we can study yield responses, the variation in response along those strips. And of course, because usually there are significant differences in soil test values, soil types or properties, and yield potential within a field, then this should be very useful. Now, there are a few things that we have learned over the years. We are still struggling and trying to adapt that, but we have to match or consider somehow the width of the strip that we're going to have, the width of the fertilizer applicator, the width of the planter, the combined parcels per strip, and so forth. We must consider previous information, if available, concerning the within-field variation in soil test values and yield. Because then that depends what is the density of our sampling, you know, and especially if we are doing plant analysis that is expensive, you see, we need to have an idea of what is really the density that we need to do. And then, of course, sections along a treatment strip or along a rep are not replications for ANOVA. That's a classic. But for soil test calibration, we can use, you know, sections along strips. There's no problem with that. So this is just an example of some of the things we have been doing. We have, at least 500 strip trials since the mid-90s using this methodology, published several papers. But this is just an example. We have, I don't remember this field exactly, but normally we have about 1,000 to a mile long. We have the soil series, typical from Iowa. And then we have these cells, small cells that essentially each cell has the width of a replication, okay, here. And then it's split, you know, whatever treatment we have, two or three. And then based on experience, essentially, we have we split that, you know, along the strips based on the need in terms of how the variability is and based on the money. Because, of course, the longer we have, the most information, but you have more samples. So we can have all these things, you know, there along those strips. Of course, then we can have fun with GIS, you know, and these are the treatments. For example, in this case, we're two. We have the yield monitor file. We can calculate average yields by strip, which would be the equivalent to the classic way wagon strip trial. We can calculate differences, but then we also can calculate yields or yield response for each of these small cells that are in the field. with Manuel Bermudez back in, when was that, 10, 11 years ago. He had some fun working on night for a month, you know, and look at different ways of handling this data, you know, interpolations and all the stuff. We published a paper in the Precision Ag Conference. But essentially, if we have good density and good yield monitor files and also for good density for soil sampling, it doesn't matter what interpolation we use, we get about the same thing. Now, the other interesting thing that we can do, of course, with this is to, we can calculate, study, and calculate yield responses and soil test values and relationship between those two for different soils or soil properties or elevation, whatever, that we have within the fields. This is just an example, you know. And, of course, sometimes the soils encompass all the replications, like in this case, sometimes they don't, okay? So there are different ways of handling that. But something that I am really working lately, that we are looking at that, analyzing old data and new data, is that we can also divide the field in different yield levels, you know. And this is very important because we are emphasizing the study of removal with new hybrids, you know, with all these things that we are doing. And in order to use the variable rate technology in order to do better maintenance, essentially, in fields. So we can calculate that, you know. We can sort of strip those strips apart and then do different things there. Now, the beauty of this is that we get lots of data. The inconvenience is that there is no one answer. We get all kind of answers. There is no one answer anymore now for a field trial. And then depending on your objective, depending on what you believe, depending on the assumptions, then you can have different answers there from conscious or unconscious researchers or conscious or unconscious dealers. But this is an example that Manuel Bermudez did. He's in Argentina now. So depending what we use, for example, in this case, there is an 8% response, you know, if we just use the complete set, if we exclude problem areas, too low yield, you know, it's not worth bother studying. If we look at high yield areas, for example, I think this was phosphorus, and then if we just study for the low yield areas. So this is the good thing of doing this. Okay, of course we have the statistics and all that stuff. Now, there are complications. We have the issue, of course, of the spatial variability. And I have been doing all kinds of samples. You know, this is just something that I have been showing. We did this in several fields that depending on what is, this is one field, taking some samples in a different way, depending how you take the soil samples and how many, you have a different answer. If you look at this, and that, and soil type sampling, you see these are different fields. No, these are the different fields in the vertical direction. So we have these issues, and we have done, as Dave mentioned, all this work in terms of the large scale. This is 500 feet transects. Each of these points is an average of 10 cores. I mean, an analysis on 10 cores. And I just put as an example a field with low P, a field with high P, a field with manure. It's beautiful. But then we analyze single cores over 25 feet. We published this. I think I published that in the early 90s. In sections, 25-foot section of these strips, and this is the variability that we have. Now, this is not common in the Midwest anymore, the low. What we have common in the Midwest is this. So this is really a nightmare. It's more of a nightmare than people believe. So then we have the yield monitor issues. We need some quality control for the yield monitor. We need the GPS redundancy, see? We are always there with a handheld receiver, you know, in addition to what may be in the applicator, planted, or combined. Of course, with RTK, things are easy. Flags and measuring tapes still are useful. We have a few. The yield monitor calibration is important. Now, it's a relative issue. As long as the yield is about the same and the monitor really reflects difference in yields, really, I don't care if it is 10 bushels more or less, unless we are doing that in order to estimate removal, okay, an application. The data quality control, combine a yield monitor's errors. Don't just look at those yields. Look at the advanced file, whatever it is, where you have the flow, you know, the speed, all the timing, all these things. Of course, there are a couple of programs out there in order to clean yield maps. Really, I don't trust them too much. I'm not saying they're bad. So I prefer my students to be at night with lots of Mountain Dew, you know, and look into that just to fix it. I think it's better. We have some problems once in a while. Normally we don't. This is just a problem. It was in the late 90s where we're still farmers and ourselves were starting to learn. It's obvious that we have several issues. We have a delay, wrong delay, you can tell that, lag. We have lost the differential correction here at some points. So we essentially look at this, you know, and fix those errors, try to fix them, or just delete them, you know, if we cannot fix it somehow. So it's not easy. That's the problem many people out there. They believe, oh, yeah, it's easy. Just go with the monitor, you know, do some special joining, you know, put that, export that, and that's it. No. I mean, yeah, if you have a response of 20, 30 bushels, doesn't matter what you do, you get it okay. But if you really want to fine-tune, no, that's not the way. This is just some data I took from Tom Colvin from Iowa, USDA, ARS. He's retired. That he spent the last 15 years of his life looking at yield monitors and how they compare, for example, with wagging, you know. So we need to be careful. The issue of if the combine goes on up the slope or goes down the slope, you know. These are things, for example, we try to have at least two passes from each strip. One go, another come back, at least to neutralize that. In soybean, that's a pain in the neck because it's so wide. So we need to be careful. And then based on this is that you can decide how far is the chunks that you cap there, you know. And I get so nervous when some people, you know, look at 2, 3, 4 monitor points. That could be, you know, 50 feet or less. What the heck that means, you know. So we essentially now, that's why the smallest area that we work is about 100 to 150 feet along the streams. Now, the beauty is that, for example, this is an example. We have 4 soil types in these strip trials. So we can do calibration within a field now. In Iowa, you see, really, most soils, we don't get a different trend for the calibration. We don't, for PK. So in this case, you see all the soils, 4, essentially are all aligned along a curve. Of course, we have mostly yellow here. We have mostly red here. So we need to be careful. But this is what we can do. Definitely, we do have different sites within a field. And we can use this technology to do things like this. And then, of course, we can merge these with many trials. This is not the only thing. Yeah. Back in the early 90s, we started with Pedro Barbagelata. He's now in Argentina, looking at different ways of handling this data. And then with Matt Clover, he was working on a PhD and then a postdoc with me, and then Agrium stole him from me. So we were looking at this with more data for potassium. So we have, for this set, he had 37 or 38 fields. And these are all the calibration using these cells. This is what we have. Here are the critical levels, different models. Of course, depending what model you use, you get a different critical level. And then these are averages by site. So this is the calibration just using the weight wagon type of trial. And this is if we just doing the GIS, then we have a number, a pair of numbers for each soil series, see, within a field. And Matt also work, you know, with different yield levels. See, we are working with that. So what is the answer? What is the right answer? And of course, we can think in terms of what of these samples from these small cells mean? Is that really different, or is it just sampling error? If you come back to the same cell and take samples again, you know, you take some in the morning and then come in the afternoon, and you took samples again, do you get the same number? But essentially, I think that all of these are useful, and we can use that in order to learn. Now, if you look at the critical levels, for example, let's just use the linear plateau, the center one, 205, 209, 187. See, you see that the difference in critical levels or ranges, depending on what model we use, is much bigger than the difference in the methodology. And we know that. When I was a postdoc, I published that paper in 92 with Fred Blackmer. Depending on what model you use and what assumptions you have, you can get the critical level you want. Anyway, so what about calibration then? I didn't talk too much about the ramp, you know, and all the things that some are trying, my colleagues in the Dakotas and Bill Round and so forth with nitrogen. The problem is that we have to use several rates. And then if we go with a floater, you know, 190 feet, you know, boom, you know, How are you going to do that? The internal variability across that, you know, is very bad. So unless you have narrow rates that you can do with a small applicator or with a planted application, then it's a problem. The randomization becomes more important, you see? Although you can just put the treatments, you know, without randomization, then we can use some kind of statistical tricks, you know. Of course, I know I will get burned at the stake for saying that, but there are all kinds of things, bootstrapping, all these things that you can do. But then we have variable rate technology, which is beautiful because you can apply different rates, you know, so easy in the field. Oh, yeah? What is the rate that you're applying? The calibration, the uniformity within a pass, if it is a spinner, if it is one of the air boom, and so forth. What about the spreading lag? You see? So these are issues that are really complicated, and we are trying, people are trying it. So in conclusion, I think that really, these technologies are great to work on soil test calibration. There are clear advantages. We can study responses within a field for different things that vary in the field. Portion of fields really are different sites. There's no doubt about it. There are many ways of interpreting data. The problem is that there is no one answer anymore. We need to decide what is we're trying to do and why. But there are potential problems, too. Doing the right thing isn't so easy and cheap for field, lab, and data management work. Doing on-farm testing with precision ag technologies and strip trials is easy. Doing on-farm research is a completely different thing, and people are confused about that. They talk about on-farm testing or demonstrations and on-farm research, and those are completely different things. We must be very careful with yield monitors. It's not so easy to control other factors when you're working a field scale. We have the problem of small-scale test and yield variability, and it's very expensive to get dense additional measurements. Now I'm getting into some projects with micronutrients doing this. The money you have to spend, you know, trying to do plant analysis, you know, with a good density over the field is not, it's not cheap. So, can we use precision ag technology for soil test correlation? A big yes, no doubt about it. But isn't so easy and cheap to do the right thing as many believe. Can we use precision ag technology for calibration? Ah, that's the issue, maybe. In my opinion, I don't trust it much. I think that the classic small plot trials still are superior in terms of what you can control. And with that, Fabian, I'm done.
All right, great. We have a minute or two. Any questions for Antonio?
Okay. I will be around for the discussion anyway. So.